Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Mehdi Samati, who is a professor in the Department of Communication at Northern Illinois University and the author of many books, including Media, Culture, and Society in Iran, Living with Globalization and the Islamic State. His research interests include international and global communication, cultural politics of globalization, race and media cultures, and Iranian media and culture. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mehdi Samati.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I'm interested in getting a sense from Iran of how the agreement is being received, both in terms of the hardliners and, I believe, the young in Iran, most of whom don't remember the Shah or even the hostage crisis. So let's start with the hardline reaction. What have you noticed?
Well, the reception has generally been positive, notwithstanding a few disgruntled hardliners on the right. For example, Kayhan, one of the most right-wing publications in Iran, and websites such as Rajah News, they published commentaries that are critical. But these outbursts, compared to the positive press coverage the agreement in Geneva received, were minuscule. The conservatives, or I should say ultra-conservatives, have had no choice really but to accept this as a fait accompli, if for no other reason than the fact that the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, has endorsed the negotiations. And congratulatory statement by his office was distributed swiftly right after the agreement had been reached in Geneva in a way that preempted any naysayers in high places to issue any criticism. And that has really meant that overall, even when there was some criticism, it was muted, generally speaking. And even in the parliament, there was, for a brief moment, some criticism. But then once the Supreme Leader has endorsed the negotiations and the results are perceived to be satisfactory by him, it's a done deal.
So in terms of the young, as I mentioned, most of whom certainly don't remember the Shah and many don't remember the hostage crisis, but they have grown up with a steady diet of death to America and the great Satan. How are they responding?
Well, there were media reports that the negotiating team arrived to a hero's welcome by supporters in Mehrabad Airport in Tehran. And I saw on Mr. Zarif's Facebook page, that's the foreign minister, he actually had thanked supporters for coming to the airport, and he said that he was sorry that the security personnel didn't let him get out of the car, and nothing would have been sweeter than, you know, getting close to these people. And I think this is more important than the reaction of the press. People are relieved, thrilled, and elated by this development. The word on the street, especially, their reactions on social media reflect that kind of sentiment and attitude. Many young people in Iran, as you may know, are, and for the country that has a population of a young population, 70% of the population is under the age of 35, and many of these people have access to social media, have access to outside news sources, and they are much more comfortable at expressing themselves than older audiences. The attitudes by them reflected in these, you know, various places reflect that they are really thrilled about the developments. They are elated, and the feelings expressed, the joy felt and, you know, expressed about the agreement in Geneva was on a par with the election of Rouhani as president, if not bigger. I think it's palpable, that kind of reaction in Iran. Speaking to people, you know, and following the news on state-run media and following the events on social media, it's a stark sort of contrast to what was going on only a few years ago.
Again, I'm speaking with Mehdi Samati, who is a professor in the Department of Communication at Northern Illinois University and the author of many books, including Media, Culture, and Society in Iran, Living with Globalization and the Islamic State. His research interests include international and global communication, cultural politics of globalization, race and media cultures, and Iranian media and culture. So What kind of vision do you think, if you, as much as you can make these generalizations, do the young Iranians feel about their place in the world? Because clearly they have been isolated from the world, and you have, as you just mentioned, 70% of the population in Iran is under 35, and this hostile relationship between the United States and Iran has gone on for, 34 years? So,
yeah. I think that I think you are, very right about your observation. The jovial disposition that Iranians display is about more than the agreement or the details of the agreement, in my opinion. Yes, they are thrilled about the possibility of relief from sanctions. Yes, they're happy that the threat of another war is lessened. But I think that disposition is about something bigger, and that has to do with finding a more dignified position on the global stage that rightfully belongs to them. Iranians are a cosmopolitan people. They're a proud people. Iran have become a pariah, especially during the last 8 years of Mr. Ahmadinejad's presidency. And the image that Iranians, young people especially, saw themselves in popular media or in the rhetoric of their own politicians and those in the West was not one they deserved. And I think what people are responding to is the possibility of restoring their standing. People know that instinctively. I think the politicians of the West had not taken or have not taken the concept of respect very seriously when it comes to dealing with Iran and the Iranian people. I think President Obama gets some credit in this regard. Respect is a fundamental value in Iranian culture, and I think much of this reaction is about that. And people, especially young people, are well aware of how they're perceived outside Iran, how they are portrayed in popular media from Hollywood movies and television programs and basic rhetoric of the press. But they see them, they don't recognize themselves. And this is more about that, I believe. They are seeing that possibility that they are treated with dignity and respect, and they are striving to achieve that, in my opinion, and that's what you see in young people's, attitudes and everything they do when it comes to social media and the opinions they express.
So what was the response in Iran to the movie Argo that won the Academy Award last year?
From everything that I followed, there was, of course, the official reaction by the state media and politicians that they thought, this was representation that distorted their image and their revolutionary, principles. But that's to be expected. I think when it came to people, and young people especially, I think they were more conflicted about it. On the one hand, they're very savvy, and they know that this is Hollywood, it's filmmaking. And even they saw, they saw that the operation, however constrained, there are moments in the film that you see an attempt at humanizing Iranians. But at the end of the day, I think they see it for what it is. It's, Hollywood out to make, money. But they, deep down, I don't believe anybody is happy with, being depicted the way they were in that film. So there was this, on the one hand, recognition that it's Hollywood, they're making, a film. But on the other, I think people, again, instinctively know that this is not what they deserve.
So it seems that since the Green Revolution, the spontaneous protests against what most Iranians, or at least those in the major cities and the young in particular, felt the elections were stolen, and these protests were brutally put down. And since then, it seems that the regime, rather than openly kill dissidents in the streets, obviously nothing on the scale of what's happening in what happened in Egypt and what's happening in Syria, but it does seem like the regime has jailed a lot of its protesters and a lot of journalists, etc. So how is that going to change? You still got the besieged militia, they still got the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guard Corps, very much in control. My understanding is that the young are pretty fed up with religious strictures of these kind of religious vigilantes. as far as I know, they're not as aggressive as they used to be. You know, they used to go around, ride around on motorcycles and slash people and protesters, etc., and arbitrarily harass women for showing too much hair or too much leg or whatever. Is that still going on?
Well, I think what you're pointing out is correct in the sense that some elements of Iranian politics and Iranian state, you know, haven't changed, even though we've had a new president. I think the public has been willing to give President Rouhani more time to accomplish his campaign pledges. I believe this was a major campaign promise, more important than anything else, that he would reach an agreement with the West. He had said that he would bring a government of moderation and a rational government, and that he would end the nation's isolation on the global stage. And he's delivering on that promise, and rather successfully so. And part of the reason Mr. Rouhani has been embraced by Iranians and even the West is that the previous administration had lowered the bar so dramatically. Having said all of that, I think you're right that some things, some things haven't changed. But I think this is the beginning of, at least as far as Mr. Rouhani's campaign pledges, you know, are concerned. This is the first stage. In some ways, he's been asking for more time, more patience. And one thing that the public has been, I would say, critical about is precisely that. For example, the two individuals perceived to be the leaders of the Green Movement and the two persons who are under house arrest, and that would be Mr. Mirhossein Mousavi and Mr. Mehdi Karoubi, the public has been wanting to see them out of house arrest, and that hasn't happened yet. But I think the public, again, instinctively knows that you can't really expect everything to, you know, overnight to be resolved and every issue and every concern addressed. But I think what's more important than the specific or the individual, you know, demands is this overall horizon of expectations that in Iran is changing. Increasingly, people are not, you know, accepting of what used to be, you know, the norms of the conduct by the state. So I think in the long term, there will be expectations that those things will change as well. But for right now, they are willing to give him more time to accomplish, you know, one promise at a time. So I think you're right, but things are moving in that direction, and there are hopeful signs that he might be able to achieve a lot more than what we see right now.
So, Mehdi Samadi, what do you think, though, is the relationship between Rouhani and the Supreme Leader who has endorsed this agreement? But at the same time, while Rouhani has moderated his views enormously about Israel and signaled a change in the rhetoric, the Supreme Leader has not. He's still talking about essentially, you know, wiping Israel off the map and this kind of rhetoric that we associate with Ahmadinejad.
Yes. I think what's different about Mr. Rouhani is that he's always been a sort of a pragmatic and a practical sort of politician, even if he was caught up, you know, in the rhetoric at the time, the sort of revolutionary rhetoric. But he's always been a person who had practical and pragmatic views. And I believe his ties to the system, to the regime, you know, right down to the very sensitive, you know, security apparatus, are deep, and those ties are serving him well. And in some ways, you know, it is one could see the Supreme Leader basically using him to stabilize what was being a very untenable situation for the Islamic Republic. Now, I should add that this is sometimes some of these changes are irreversible. For example, people, as I said, you know, horizon of expectations is now moving. and or changing, and that is in some ways irreversible. I should also add that Supreme Leader of the Islamic Republic has very savvy political manner has framed the success and negotiations as something that Mr. Rouhani and his team has accomplished. By definition, that means you own it. That means if there is at some point, any issues that he has with the conduct of the West, he has left himself some room to renege and say that, this is something that you were involved with and you accomplished. But at the same time, I think, we should recognize that the decision has been made for various reasons by the Supreme Leader that this is the strategy that they want to pursue, and for, as I said, for various reasons, and Mr. Rouhani happens to be the right person to accomplish, these goals. I think there were media reports about back channel talks, as far back as March of last year, and this year, that Americans had reached out to the office of the Supreme Leader, and that President Obama had sent letters to the Supreme Leader quite, some time ago. Now, none of that means that what Mr. Rouhani is doing, an important, or that we should take away anything from the way he's been accomplishing the goals that he set out to accomplish. But that politics in Iran is factious, it is fractured, and that it's a factional politics, and that means it's a very complicated, situation. But Mr. Rouhani has proved to be very skillful in navigating these difficult waters of Iranian politics. And I should also add that about the rhetoric of, wiping Israel off the map. There's been some debates about what exactly do they mean. The debate is this, at least the spirit of that kind of rhetoric has meant to, imply or say that if there were to be elections, free elections held within then the territories where the occupied territories and, that area generally, through some elections, then would have a drastic, a different, arrangement in government. That's different from saying that issuing explicit military threat that we're going to, bomb you. And of course, this doesn't mean I endorse that sort of rhetoric. And they have done themselves, quite a bit of disservice by engaging in that kind of rhetoric. But even that sort of statement should be viewed in that context. And I should also add that people in Iran and in the West and even inside Israel know that there is no military solution to this nuclear issue. And I should also add that, in my judgment, the value of sanctions is overstated. Think about this. Iran has been under sanctions in one form or another for the past, 30 years. And despite those sanctions, Iran has managed to increase its nuclear activities. The enrichment, capacity that they have has gone up under these sanctions. So if sanctions were working, Iran would not be in this position to negotiate. So I think President Obama gets credit here for basically accepting that there is no military solution and that there is limit to how much sanctions can do, and that ultimately the only path forward is that of a diplomatic solution. And it looks like for now, contrary to the efforts by hardliners in Israel, in Iran, and in the United States, especially in U.S. government, the Senate, and the Congress, that path is being pursuit and successfully so far.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Mehdi Samati.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Mehdi Samati, who's a professor in the Department of Communication at Northern Illinois University and the author of many books, including Media, Culture, and Society in Iran, Living with Globalization and the Islamic State. His research interests include international and global communication, cultural politics of globalization, race and media cultures, and Iranian media and culture. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking with the Catholic theologian Matthew Fox about the just-released document from Pope Francis.